Welcome to episode 295 of After the Credits. I am your co-host, Marina Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Colleen, no fixed address.
Dale of, God, what is my website again? I don't know. It's COVID haze. Oh, the motleyjournal.com. There you go.
I was going to say it's motley something.
Yeah.
I'm so far back. I'm like, it's Digital Doodles, isn't it?
That's still there. Yes, Digital Doodles there. Didn't feel like it fit anymore. So it's going to be archived. I had some fun stuff on there, though.
Cool.
Agreed. I shake my head on the radio because, you know, everybody can see it. So it's been a while since we've recorded, but we are back to talk about movies and TV. I know that we talked last episode, maybe I think it was off air, but maybe splitting the show into like movies and television. But I don't know. On my end, at least, I've watched like almost nothing in 2 months.
Oh, wow.
So my list is very, very short. So I don't know. Do you guys want to just like forge ahead with one episode and then let's forge ahead.
I have watched so much television, but I will do the Marina film thing of filtering what I'm actually going to talk about.
I can't remember what I've all watched, so I only, whatever is on the top of my head. Everything else is annexed to the realms of history.
Nice. I love it. So who wants to start with what?
I'll start.
Go for it.
TV/Netflix thingy.
Sure.
First one. Frankie Drake Mysteries, sort of like the female equivalent of the Murdoch Mysteries, but in my mind, way better. It sadly was not picked up, so the series finale just ended. So there will be no more Frankie Drake, and unfortunately, it ended on like a half a dozen cliffhangers.
Oh.
Yeah, if they had given them any more notice, they probably wouldn't have killed off one of the main characters, introduced the brother character, like all this stuff. But I believe it's still available on CBC Gems. You can watch, I think, the entire 4 seasons. I think there's only usually about 10 episodes per season. I love it. I like it more than Murdoch Mysteries, and I actually like Murdoch Mysteries, so...
Well, hopefully they'll give it like a 2-hour special to give you some closure. Like, that is awful.
Yeah, I know. I just watched it. And then after that, during the show, it had like a listing for, is like, oh, Frankie Drake Mysteries is like tonight, the series finale. I'm like going, season finale. Wait, series finale? What? And then like the very next sort of like cut when it comes back on, one of the main characters has now been shot and presumably killed. It's like, nah. Of course, in like she wouldn't have been probably really killed because she is a major, major character in it. So we don't know. The other one is, I have two other ones. One is I've started watching Snowpiercer, which all of our friends Seth Rutledge does background painting for, and I wasn't sure how much I was gonna like the series. I gave it a go. God damn, do I like the series!
Oh,
I'm really enjoying it, especially the second season where they introduce basically, you thought they were all alone for all this time, but there was another train out there.
Yeah, so I really, really enjoyed season one, and I haven't gotten started on season two yet because I haven't had time to watch anything.
I won't say much about it, but
it's been good.
The other train did appear at the end of season one, right?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why I knew about the other train, yeah, but I don't know anymore. So
huge amounts of backlash from that and problems.
Okay. Question.
Getting quite bloody well dark. So I like it. Sorry.
I have a question. I watched the first 3 episodes, I think.
It gets better.
And couldn't get into it. Yeah, so does it get better, and should I judge it on those 3?
I wouldn't. I thought it was a really slow start, and I don't think it really started amping up and actually getting really interesting until, I would say, sadly, the end of season one. I think it took it a while to find its footing, and then once it kind of found its way, I think there were some, I don't know, it felt really disjointed with the back of the train and front of the train stories. And then when they kind of met the two stories in the middle and they started moving, like, they brought like the two worlds more together, I think it got more interesting. So I thought for sure the second part of the season was way better than the first part.
Yeah,
I thought it started, I thought it was a really, really slow start.
A lot of it was, I think they had to introduce so much sort of like basis for this world in the first few episodes before they could really start doing the interdynamics and like all the interplay within all the different social classes. Because if you threw that in on the first episode, you'd be like, why are these in conflict? Why is this going
on? I think they took the approach of assuming that most of the people that had seen the show had not seen the film.
Yeah.
So they kind of started from literally ground zero. And I think, you know, for those of us that are familiar with the movie, that probably felt like redundant. But
I would give it a few more episodes. If you're really not in it in another couple, it's probably never going to be. Yeah.
I'm with that.
I might do that. I mean, that is really hard, introducing those big worlds. But I look at like The Expanse and Game of Thrones,
mm-hmm.
The Wire, which is one of mine. There's ways of doing it that work.
Agreed. Whereas like Game of Thrones bored me to death the second it started and I could not get into it. Like I forced myself to watch two full seasons. I'm like, what am I doing? I hate this.
Well, yeah, and you're allowed to not like a world.
Yeah. Exactly. I thought The Expanse has done it the best out of anybody, like other than maybe Star Trek. The Expanse for me is the one, at least of the last, you know, 6 or 7 years, that has really created a really cohesive and enormous universe with all this rich back history that feels like from the ground, like from the first episode, there's a very clear sense that, you know, the creators know exactly what's happening at every corner, and you don't always get that in TV shows. I mean, I love that show. So.
Yeah, me too.
Biased.
And my last one, I just started, last week. It's a Netflix, I think it might be a Netflix original. It's called Insatiable, where a girl that was unpopular, had a weight issue, had all sorts of issues in her life, gets in a fight with a homeless guy and ends up getting her jaw broken. And for the next like 6 months, her mouth is wired shut. She loses about 75 pounds, becomes instantly kind of hot, and is having difficulties dealing with her change of, she's suddenly hot and popular and can get the guys, and she's entering beauty pageants and is obsessed with her pageant coach, and just her life is a fucking train wreck, and it's entertaining somehow. And the second season, it gets super weird. And like they end up killing people in the second season. And then wild pigs eat the body. And it is zany, zany, zany.
What the fuck?
It's super weird. I somehow watching a TV show that main premise has like this running sort of beauty pageant. Oh, the pageant she's running for in the first season is Miss Magic Jesus. Oh. And God. She's not religious at all.
All right.
And then they find out she hasn't been baptized. So then she has like this weird sort of deal with the pastor to baptize her and her pageant coach at the same time. And It's just so weird.
I have issues with the setup, but it sounds like it could be kind of funny.
Yeah.
I might give this a look.
I kind of did too. She, I, It's even hard to describe the premise. It is so weird.
You did pretty good, because I like that turnaround of suddenly becoming popular and have not having the context to deal with it. That sounds like a fascinating
about not having the skill set to survive in this particular new world you've been dumped into.
You know, and that you know, this, there's you also an aspect person. Of be careful what you wish for, you might get it.
Yeah.
Yep.
There's a lot of you were a good person before this happened to you. I'm not so sure you are now. Yeah. So, I'm finding it entertaining. So, and that's it for me for TV Netflix.
Mr. Dale?
Well, Marina's gonna remember a couple of these things, because she talked about them and I watched them.
Ooh. Ooh.
I watched Bridgerton, and I enjoyed the hell out of it.
Right? Dukerson.
So many people were talking about it, and then when you mentioned it was like, okay, I just have to check this out. And
welcome to the family.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah. And I love the conceit of I meant to get her name, because I knew I couldn't. Lady something, the one doing the letters.
Oh yes.
I loved how it stopped itself from becoming too serious about the whole society thing by having that running commentary calling bullshit on the whole thing. And the characters were great. I loved so many of the characters in here. Even the ones that weren't that, you know, nice, but they were fun to watch. The kind of great aunt of the Duke, I forget her name, with the cane.
By far my favorite person in that whole show.
She was fierce. She's great. I loved her. I didn't see enough of her, but maybe that was part of what made her so enjoyable. But anyway, very much thumbs up for me. It was funny. I mentioned it to a coworker, and he was like, I watched that over my wife's shoulder. That's kind of softcore porn, isn't it? And I'm like,
absolutely.
Is it? And then I thought about it, and it's like, yeah, Ashley, this is the kind of stuff that
not.
I might have been watching in the 2000s on, you know, late night TV. No. But
I'm no. As soon as she hooks up with the Duke, yeah, you have to admit.
I mean, the difference.
I don't. The difference agree with
is that. The difference is the context. I'll say that the difference is the context. Like,
yes.
there's definitely from the 2000s those kinds of sex scenes that they could show on TV were very much still in that like really bad kind of porn setup. There was nothing redeeming about most of the stories. This one, it's in support of the story. So I softcore porn is going too far, but I mean, I understand where the comment's coming from.
Yeah.
Sure. It's funny because I just read this article that Ashley Lynch had tweeted out about sexuality of our heroes, and it was specifically talking about superheroes. But that twigged something really interesting in my mind, that it is true that sex is handled in a very different way now than it was even like 5 years ago. And like, nobody is sexual anymore. So when you see it, you're like, oh my God. But it's really not, I didn't think there was anything really salacious about it. I thought it was really well handled. And like you say, Dale, it was in service of the story. And it came as a surprise, because it's not what you tend to think of when you think of a period drama. Like, they don't usually include sex like that. But like, now that I saw it, I'm like, yeah, they should all have this. Like, I'm used to, you know, Joe Wright's Pride and Prejudice, where if you watch the cut that's out, I think it's the cut that's on Netflix, and the cut that's usually that was on the movie, there isn't even one kiss in the entire movie. Not one.
Wow.
You have to watch the extended cut to get the Mrs. Darcy scene at the very end, where they actually kiss. But well, you watch that movie, they never kiss.
That's what I mean, in Bridgerton, like my initial response to him was like, oh, you got to be kidding. And then I had to think about it. And it's like, yeah, okay, there's some of those hot scenes and some skin. The other interesting thing as you were talking, I just realized, though, is they maintained the whole Victorian. And this is probably, again, why I liked it. They maintained the whole Victorian sensibility, like in public. It was like, I cannot be seen alone with you. It will damage my reputation, right? But in private, they're fucking like bunnies, you know? And I, just, as I think about it, I enjoy that too. Anyway, Bridgerton, thumbs up.
Absolutely.
The other one that I watched that you had talked about was Younger.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I love Younger so much.
It was a lot of fun. The last two seasons, so I watched the whole series. I forget how many, five or six.
I think there's five.
It is just a like fun fluff. And when I started watching it, I thought, oh, this could like really have some biting social commentary, but the writers weren't really up for that. And there were some aspects of the characters that made me like mad. Like, I don't feel like they can write for Hilary Duff's character to save their life. Like, poor Hilary Duff's character. They just, like, all she did was make bad decisions and react. But a credit to, I didn't actually think Hilary Duff was this good an actor, but she is. She carries it through in spite of having some really bad scenes. And I think I read somewhere she might get a spinoff. So that would be interesting. The last two seasons were a little bit flat. I kind of so the conceit of the show for those that aren't familiar with it is a woman who is in her 30s is trying to go back to work in the publishing industry. No one will give her a job. So she pretends to be in her 20s and, or is she in her 40s? She might,
she's in her 40s, I think.
Yeah. So anyway, she pulls off looking younger, and that's the conceit of the show anyway. And hilarity ensues. And I really enjoyed the first few seasons of it. And I could not get, there is a 30-second clip at the end where they play a song called Million Dollar Life, just the musical thing. I could not get that damn song out of my head. I like downloaded it and have played it a million times. Anyway, Check it out if you're into those kinds of stories. It's the first few seasons are, like Marina said in the last podcast, just a lot of fun. I'd watched the first season of The Wire, which is a TV police procedural from 2002, a bunch of years ago. And just for whatever reason, I decided I wanted to start watching it again. So I watched seasons 2 to 5. They only have 5 seasons. And wow, like season 2 was so much better than season 1. And I enjoyed the hell out of kind of seasons 2 to 4. 5 was a little bit weak. And it follows, it's an ensemble cast set of characters in the Baltimore Police Department and a few other characters like a DA and some politicians. And it got a lot of acclaim for like very good reasons. They did a really good job of capturing all of the work involved with making a case. So the police are primarily going against the drug dealers, and you have, they get into depth with the drug dealers, and the characters are just all really human, like with all of their flaws and all of their goodness. And that was one of the fun things about watching that is I really enjoyed the different characters, and they all were just their own person. Like, and the writing for them was really good. They were doing what they were doing, and some of them were drunks and some of them weren't, and just the whole variety. And the story was good. Like, building a case, each season focused on a different thing. So the second one was the waterfront. They were trying to build a case against someone on the waterfront. And I forget what the third season is. The fourth was kind of educational system and the fifth was newspapers, but all against the background of like drug trade. And the world is a, like a really real world with, you know, the kind of entrenched corruption, but not evil, evil, just people skating along. And like the whole end result is this inertia that you can't change. And in spite of all of that, there's kind of a nobility of the characters trying to make good in a rigged world with their flaws. And I just enjoyed the hell out of it. It was some really good television and it holds up really well, like the 2000 to 2006. And I'm watching it in 2021 and it was great. And also you kind of see the evolution of the cell phone. They start with pagers and they wind up with relatively modern cell phones. That was kind of fun.
Nice.
And the last one I'm going to talk about is Allen versus Farrow, which is a 4-part documentary on the whole Woody Allen, Mia Farrow, and built around the court case because they had the documents so they won't get their asses sued off. But they have a bunch of footage from Farrow and Dylan Farrow. And I don't know why I'm watching this because I'd already decided not to. I mean, we've had lots of discussions about not watching Woody Allen anymore. And I've never really been interested in the details. Like, you know, I heard enough, I made up my mind, and the rest just felt kind of redactive and sensationalist. But I watched this series because some other people I knew were finding it really interesting. And it is, it's fascinating. And I really appreciated the way the producers have put the material together. It starts off, the first two episodes start off just kind of setting background with life story. And it's based on interviews and videotape. Mia Farrow was really in, had a video camera. And so they're showing footage and it's unlike the sensationalist bullshit we usually see on these like crime TV Redux shows. And so the third one, they got into the actual court case. And I think, I'm not sure what the fourth one is. It's just, I've only seen three of the four. And I just like the whole sensibility of the way that they're presenting this. I've liked, and I can't tell you why, but something I wasn't interested in before, I've been interested in watching. So how anyone could support Ellen after seeing the stuff that was in the court case documents is beyond me. This man should be in jail. And that's it for my TV.
Well, that sounds really interesting. Is that an HBO doc?
I forget.
You know, I'll look it up, but I'm really curious.
Let me look it up here. And I think it might
be. Because I'd seen something on it and then it totally forgotten. So it's good that you brought it up because I'll have to add that to my watch list. That sounds like it's going to be a really good watch for sure.
Yeah, and four episodes too. It's not like huge.
It's nice and short. I like it. Okay, so I've seen some stuff that I think you guys have probably seen as well, but maybe didn't mention. I don't know. So WandaVision has wrapped.
Yes. I miss WandaVision. Yes.
I don't get Disney.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think it's fair that we all talk about it. So no,
I don't have. No, you go ahead. Like I didn't want to spoil a whole lot. I just mostly wanted to say I saw it, I enjoyed it, and Catherine Hahn was amazing.
Yeah, she was by far for me the best part of the show. I'm not quite sure how I feel about the whole thing because it felt very like pandering to an audience, and I'm not that audience because I was not the person that was going in after the episode aired to look for all like the Easter egg things that I may have missed during the episode. I just didn't care enough. But I did enjoy it overall. I thought it was really well done and really interesting. And yeah, that's my take on WandaVision. Like, I have no take on WandaVision other than I thought it was fine. And I really like Elizabeth Olsen. So, and Paul Bettany, who's also great. The best thing about WandaVision that I saw was an interview for, I think it was, of all things, BuzzFeed Celeb. I was cruising YouTube for something else, and it came up like on the related videos. And I watched this interview with Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany basically talking to each other. And it was really funny because they start by talking about how they thought they were getting – Paul Bettany thought he was getting fired when they called him into the studio to tell him about the show and pitch it to him, because he's like, my contract was done. And so they told me to come to the office, to the boss's office. And I thought for sure I was getting fired. And I got in there and I started talking about, you know, basically I was trying to save my job. And Elizabeth Olsen's like, well, I knew for sure I wasn't getting fired because they called me while I still had to do reshoots for, I guess it was Endgame, whatever the title of the last Avengers movie was. So it was really funny, and it just went from there. It's only like 7. I'll see if I can find it. It was a lot of fun. That was probably the best part of the entire thing. And Elizabeth Hahn, who's like amazing. So good. So good. So good. She was by far my favorite.
Her range through that whole thing was just kind of blew me away. Like going from the black and white stuff to the different characters, and then the ultimate reveal.
Go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I found this the most human of all the Marvel properties that I've watched between the TV and the movies. And it was interesting, people's reactions to the way they chose to do the progressing of the TV shows from the sitcoms from the 50s. Up to like the 80s or 90s, however long that went. Some people hated it. I enjoyed it. And I'm wondering if that isn't because I actually remembered those shows. Like the opening of that first one, I'm not so old. I watched Dick Van Dyke in First Run, but my formative TV was Saturday morning cartoons and watching sitcoms like the Dick Van Dyke Show in rerun. And I just so nailed it for me. And that was just a whole lot of fun. And then I always love shows that have a mystery that progresses. And Kat Denning as Darcy and Jimmy Choo, like those two should get a series.
Agreed.
They just a whole lot of fun. And I'm one of those people, I did enjoy, I don't spot them, but I really enjoyed reading the articles afterwards, pointing out all the different things and all of the speculation. So overall, I think it would have worked for me without all of that, but the whole way they set that up worked for me and I enjoyed it. I completely understand why it wouldn't be for all people, because they definitely made creative choices that are outside of what regular television presents.
For sure. They took some chances, which I really appreciate. I really like that. I just think it's funny that for a lot of people, that's the first time they've seen Han. And they're like, well, where'd she come from? I'm like, do you not watch movies like ever? Like, where have you been? But I don't know. I did enjoy it. It's another like pretty decent entry into, I don't want to say great. Okay. I don't want to give Disney any greats at this point, but it's a pretty good show. I'd say, you know, it's worth checking out. It's definitely a little challenging, which I really, really liked. Like you say, Dale, it doesn't really play by the rules. So that's one that I rather enjoyed. Another one that Dan and I binge watched, which I was not expecting to like as much as I did, was The Flight Attendant with, Kelly Cuoco and Michael Huseman. So she was on, for those that don't know her, she was on, what was the name of that show?
Big Bang.
The Big Bang Theory. That's right. So this is like her first big thing since The Big Bang Theory. And it's so not like The Big Bang Theory. So she plays an alcoholic flight attendant who gets herself into some hot water and basically needs to get herself out. With the help of the dead guy that she woke up next to, not remembering how he died. So it is a mystery. It was on HBO, but it was also on CTV in Canada, which was weird, but it's so good. It's really, really well written. It's really well acted. It has a very like, with the whole flight attendant thing and the way they do the opening credits, it feels like this very sort of throwback 50s, 60s thriller. It's really well done. I highly, highly recommend it. It's super good. Super good. I liked it a lot. So big thumbs up from me. And it looks like they're going to get a second season, which will be great. I'm assuming that the mystery will not continue, which I will be disappointed by, because one of the other reasons I really wanted to watch the show is I love Michael Hoosman, but he's probably, I'm assuming his ghost will not appear in season two. So that will be it. And I'm disappointed, but I will keep watching. It's quite good. Another one that's wrapped is HBO's Your Honor with Bryan Cranston as a straight edge judge who gets himself into some hot water as well. Michael Cranston is great. Bryan Cranston, I should say, is great. So the show is pretty damn good. It's only like 9 or 10 episodes or something. So highly recommend it as well. It's pretty solid and very in, it's very encompassed into the one season. So I don't know if they're going to do any more. I don't see how they could, but it's certainly a really great little 10 episode run for sure. And then perhaps the biggest surprise for myself, maybe of the year, it's only March, so I'm okay to say that. Superman and Lois is fucking awesome.
Really?
Like, on a level that I had not anticipated. Yes.
I had some friend chew my ear off about how he hated the actress playing Lois. He just...
Okay, well, yes, I don't care. I personally, like... Dan had watched an episode and he's like, you're going to want to watch this show with me because it's pretty good. I'm like, okay, fine. So we did watch, I think, the first episode. I'm like, okay, this show is like way better than I had thought it would be. And then, like, I think it takes one episode for them to move out to Smallville. And then, you know, things start to happen. And it's a really, really, really interesting take on the story of Superman and Lois, because they've got kids, they're dealing with parent issues, the fact that maybe the kids have powers, and Superman is like a stay-at-home dad now because he got fired. Nice. Like, there's a lot of, yeah, it's playing into some really interesting things that you don't usually get to see in the Superman and Lois universe.
And this is CW, right?
Yeah, it's on the CW. I'm watching it. I think it's on CTV, but it is a CW show. I think it's great.
The reason I ask is I liked the actor playing Superman in the crossover. Yeah,
it's the same guy. What's his name? Hold on.
Arrowverse.
Tyler Hoechlin. Yeah, I liked him too in Supergirl. So I'm glad that he's taken on the mantle of Superman on TV. And Lois, I love it.
Lois showed up there too, and she didn't offend my sensibilities, so I'm not sure what my friend was, which is why I asked.
Yeah, no, I think she's a really great actress. I mean, the show is very much, it's not so much, I mean, there's still the Superman storylines, but it's way more about the family drama and the kid drama, like the high school drama of these two boys. I mean, it's just a really solid, I don't know. I just, for me, it's a really solid drama. I really like it. It's great. Oh,
you're
great.
Doing it to me again, Marina.
Another show
I'm going to have to watch.
I'm confused and I have to ask. Did they adopt children?
No.
Okay, now I'm super confused.
Oh, you
they have
read
teenage boys.
You have read Man of Steel, Woman of Kleenex, haven't you?
I have not. He's an alien, so
yes.
I'm having a problem with the biological factor. But
well, this is why the kids may or may not have powers. We don't know. Okay, ignore all of that thing. Okay, yeah. Well,
you just have to go with it. You just have to go with it sometimes.
Well, let's move on.
No. I mean, Dan's concern was, well, you know, they don't look old enough to have teenage boys. I'm like, well, you know, that doesn't mean anything.
All right.
It's solid.
Back in the, I think it was 70s, somewhere in there, Larry Niven wrote an essay called Man of Steel, Woman of Kleenex, where he very graphically kind of laid out why the intercourse between Superman and any human woman would be fraught and probably deadly to the woman.
I just had some like bad pictures in my mind. And of, like,
I haven't read it recently. I kind of hope it hasn't turned offensive. Like, I remember as a somewhat titillated teenage boy reading this, I was tittering, but I'll see if I can find a link to it. It used to be online. I apologize if it's offensive in the context of 2021.
And that's all I've watched.
All right. Books?
Yeah. Oh, wait, let's do movies first.
Movies first? All right.
Do you have any, Colleen?
I have two. Well, yes. I've seen one, and one I'm super excited about because I just found out details of it and I'm losing my fucking collective shit over it. The first one was, I kept on getting, for whatever reason, ads for, I guess, an Amazon Prime film called Coming to America 2 with Eddie Murphy.
Yes.
And so on Netflix, they do have the original Coming to America, which it has aged poorly, yet somehow is still halfway good. It's weird. That is a weird throwback of a film. It took me right back to like 1980, whatever the hell, when I watched it. And now I kind of regret not having Amazon Prime because I kind of want to see the second one. see how they brought people back from the dead, I think, to be characters in it or something.
I'll have thoughts on the second one in a bit.
And the other one is, I just read some details about it. I have no idea. I haven't looked into it because I don't want spoilers. Even if it never comes into existence, I want it to be. And it's an Elizabeth Banks. It's either produced or going to be directed. I don't know. It's called Cocaine Bear. Based on a real story where a bear ate 175 kilos of cocaine and went on a rampage. Oh my God. It's like this film was made for me. I feel emotional just thinking about the concept. Cocaine Bear. It's the greatest thing ever. And I kind of like Elizabeth Banks, the thing she's been involved with, because she has a way of not taking herself seriously in it.
I have mad respect for Elizabeth Banks in the latter 20 years. She was definitely one of those women that was overshadowed because people made assumptions, but you look at her work and what she's been involved with and
absolutely,
yeah, respect.
You know what? The thought of Cocaine Bear being involved with Elizabeth Banks, it makes me happy. It's a happy thought. Yes. So,
I'm thinking of the sequel possibilities. Cocaine Bats.
Just the whole series. It's like Sharknado, where you put different animals with a lot of cocaine penguins. They're walking in all directions, and Werner Herzog is narrating the whole goddamn thing. It just screams to be made. All right, I'm good. I'm good. That's it for me.
Oh, brother.
Oh, I that's going to stick with me all day. I'm hearing Werner Herzog talk about penguins on Main Street wreaking havoc.
Are not acting as they should. They're walking in the wrong direction. I think it is they are high as kites. Can't do a German accent.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Good times.
Oh boy.
So in non-cocaine bear related movies, you?
Dale, do you want to go or do you want me to go?
Why don't you go?
Okay, so I don't have very many, but I wanted to start with The Wanting Mare, which is Nicholas Ash Bateman's directorial debut. He's a visual effects artist who basically made a fantasy film in a warehouse in, I think, Baltimore. I wish I could recommend this higher. At times, like, it's a really interesting concept in a world that is quite different than ours. And it's about this young woman, like, history is passed down through speech and people can read and write, but books are like banned or something. It's very vague, which is one of the problems. Like, the film is way more like it's a bit on the pretentious side in that, like, it has this interesting mythology, but it's all kept very, like, close to the chest. So you never really learn a whole lot about the worlds, which makes it really hard to recommend, because half the time you don't really know what the fuck is going on. But all of that said, it looks spectacular, and watching the making of is, like, it's mind-blowing what they managed to achieve with literally, you know, however big his team of VFX artists was, which I don't think was very large, and literally a sheet that's a green screen. It's amazing. So it really does speak to, like, the power of visual effects and how you can use it in really interesting ways. I just wish the movie was a little bit better, but it is interesting. And if you go with the story, it has, like, this very kind of, like, it's one of those movies where I wish I could have seen it on the big screen, because between the music and the visuals, it does kind of have this kind of, like, wash over you quality. Like, you really kind of feel like you're in the world. But yeah, I just wish the story was a little more cohesive. So that's that. Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar, which is probably the most fun I've had watching a movie in at least 6 months. It's just freaking spectacular. Kristen Wiig and Annie Mamolo, who I'd never seen in anything, I had to look her up. They're fucking amazing together. So they play these two friends that go on holidays to Vista Del Mar. And there's, like, this weird, like, sci-fi aspect thing, I think. I don't know. There's some evil genius that's trying to kill everybody in Vista Del Mar with mosquitoes. It's so crazy. It's so crazy. And Jamie Dornan plays the love interest, and he is so funny. The whole thing is just, like, this crazy, joyous romp that shouldn't work, but totally does. And it's all, like, pastels and Hawaiian shirts and weird comedic references and just strangeness that is just so, so amazing. It's so good. I highly recommend it. It's this weird, the weirdest thing. Colleen, you would love it. You would love it. It's so weird. One of the few, I think I only watched one movie at Slamdance, and it was probably the best one because this movie is so good. So I watched a film called A Brixton Tale. It's a British film from a writing directing team of Dara Corey and Bertrand DeRoche. And it stars this these two young people who I think it's probably pretty early on for both of their careers, Lily Newmark and Ola Orbi. And Lily Newmark plays this young woman who, like, infiltrates. She's from a wealthy, she's white and from a wealthy family, and she kind of infiltrates the life that Ola's character, Benji, who is this black kid from basically the projects. And at the first, like, 20 minutes, you're not really sure what's happening, because she's walking, like, it's clearly modern, but she's walking around with this old school video camera shooting HD video. Like, wouldn't you shoot that on your phone? Like, that kind of thing. So for a while you're like, what's going on? And then the whole thing gets kind of, like, turned on its head partway through. It's a really, really interesting story that plays on perception and preconceptions, and I really, really enjoyed it, and the performances are, like, outstanding. So if you have a chance to see it, A Brixton Tale is probably going to be making its way through the festival circuit. Highly recommend it. It's great. Coming to America, which Colleen alluded to, this is Craig Brewer's sequel with basically everybody coming back. Full admission, I did not watch the first movie to get, like, caught up. So I'm totally going on just, I've seen this one, and it is, like, the most joyous bit of entertainment of the last couple of weeks. It's just bright and loud and funny, and Wesley Snipes is fucking hilarious. And just everybody is so good.
I will say one thing about the original. It was something, I had seen it before, and I had completely forgot, and it's my favorite thing in the entire film, is the two brothers in Trading Places that basically by the end were ruined by Dan Aykroyd and Eddie Murphy's character. they're in it. And Eddie Murphy as King ends up just giving them a load full of money. And the brother like wakes the other brother up because they're homeless living on the street. He's like, hey, hey, look what I got. We're back, baby. It's my favorite part in the whole film.
I love it. Yeah, there's just so much fun here. I mean, I'm not sure it's like great filmmaking, but it certainly deserves like recognition for what it is, which is this really entertaining piece of like movie with like amazing costume design. Like,
absolutely. Like
amazing costume design. And I will say this, there's an amazing interview with Craig Brewer, who is a white guy. It's worth mentioning this. So Craig Brewer is a white director who has been making movies basically about black people or with black leads for his entire career. And he did an interview connected to the movie with the Movie Maker magazine podcast. And he talked a little bit about why he makes the movies that he did, that he does. And he talks very frankly about John Singleton and his producers giving him his first go at making a movie. And he says, you know, they took me into the office and they made me a deal that they told me I had to follow by. They would give me my shot at making my first movie, but I had to promise that I would cast black people in my movies going forward. And so that's why his entire career, he's just made movies with basically black actors. And it's amazing. It's amazing. Awesome. So I'll link to that interview. It's also fantastic. But the movie is just like a lot of fun. I did look at a couple of reviews and I was like, I don't know. I kind of feel like taking a movie like that too seriously is unfair. Yeah. Cause that's not the point of it. And really it is just like joy and fun to watch. Like we really enjoyed it. I had a really good time. So I say thumbs up.
Yeah. That was the thing about the original. It doesn't age well, yet at the same time, it's full of joy and awesomeness at the same time. It's more just cringeworthy 80s clothing and concepts more than anything all honestly offensive, but like it just like, oh good God, the set deck of it is terrifying, yet at the same time, it's just full of joy.
Yeah, it's just fun. It's nice to see Eddie Murphy back, to be totally honest. It's Absolutely. Great to have him back. And then the last thing I saw just recently was Monster Hunter, Paul W.S. Anderson's latest video game adaptation. You know, he can just keep making movies at this point. I just don't care. Just give me Mila kicking ass. In this one, she basically talks to herself for most of the movie because Tony Jaa, who is like the other co-lead, they basically pretend not to speak the same language. And it's the greatest thing ever. It's so much fun. And it's basically just Mila and Tony just, you know, trying to kill giant monsters, and it totally works. It looks really great. Like, it looks expensive. I'm not sure how expensive it was, but it looks like visually it's really well done. And it's just like a lot of fun.
Cool.
I really have nothing more to say other than if the trailer looks like you might enjoy it, you're probably gonna love the shit out of it. I certainly did. So yeah.
All right.
That's it. That's all I've seen. Dale?
Okay. Is it okay if I go straight into books after my movies? Because
yes,
there's a relationship. Okay.
Absolutely.
I haven't watched a lot of movies either. I've been doing a lot of TV and a lot of reading. Shadow in the Cloud, which is the Chloe Grace Moretz plays.
I've seen this.
WAF. Yeah. On a plane and shit goes wrong. It's hard to talk about this movie without giving stuff away. I thought it had some really promising elements, and I'm kind of noting it because there was a bunch of things I liked about it, but in the end, the overall movie didn't really work for me. So, it's kind of one of those, I'm not sure where to put it. Like, I can't really recommend it, but I don't regret watching it, and I have lots to talk about it that's just picking stories apart about why it didn't work more than why it did. Although there were some really fun scenes in there, nevertheless. So what did you think?
Yeah, I could totally go with that. I mean, I really love the conceit, because the entire thing, well, not the entire thing, but most of it takes place inside a very confined space. And I love movies that make interesting use of spaces. So I did like the way they did that. And I'm with you. I think overall, I'm not quite sure how I felt about it. I really did not like the ending at all. I remember my knee jerk was, oh, that is such a shitty ending. But I don't know. Generally speaking, I'm with you. Like, I don't regret seeing it, but it's not like one of those memorable things where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to remember that movie in 10 years. I might remember it in the context of it's the second movie that takes place on a plane that with monsters that I think is really cool. Because I also, like, I never thought I would remember Altitude, which is this other movie about, like, people on a plane and a monster that I never thought I would remember. And to this day, I keep going back to it, because the cinematography was so amazing. So there's that.
So yeah, perfect. My next movie is Soul, which has been out for a while. It's a animated one about a jazz musician who finds himself in the afterlife. And it's a story sort of about finding our way and purpose in life. And it was a really nice story. I enjoyed it. Some people seem to like emotionally connect with it way more than I did. I just found it was a fun watch. And Tina Fey was so much fun in it. I mean, all of the voice actors did a great job, but the writing for the character that she played and her performance of that really made the movie for me. And the standout movie for me was Raya and the Last Dragon. Has anyone seen that yet?
Nope.
Voiced by Kelly Marie Tran, Awkwafina, and Gemma Chan without a British accent. I totally did not think it was her. It's set in a fictional Asian diaspora where Raya has a quest that will banish evil that has come to the world. Did I mention this was an epic tale? It is. I had some quibbles, but I enjoyed the hell out of this movie. It was a whole lot of fun. Lots of comedic moments. They played on the animation well, and some great characters. I mean, and it was totally like, this is not meant to be based on a fairy tale. It's just kind of a modern epic. And I thought they balanced the epic with the humor, with the storytelling really well. I really enjoyed it. And my last movie, which connects with my book pick, I read Where'd You Go, Bernadette? And this is a story written by Maria Semple, and it was adapted to film. The book was an interesting read for me. I'm going to talk about the book first, because that was the order. I read the book actually because of the movie trailer, and then I watched the movie, and I'm not sure that was the ideal way to do it, but I hated the book at first, but I warmed up to it. It has this conceit of telling the story through letters and documents. So you're not reading a narrative. You're kind of reading people writing to each other or stuff like that. But like I said, I warmed up to it, and it was like really fun, the character development that she managed to do with that. And there's this, for me, like just a really delicious moment where there's a character turnabout in the book that totally caught me by surprise and was a lot of fun and totally kind of sent the story somewhere else. And I'm not sure I can recommend the book, but I did find it a fun read. It's about an artist who has lost her way and is being a little bit kind of self-destructive, and she kind of finds her groove again, which is part of the title Where'd You Go, Bernadette, but it's not the whole thing. So the movie, unfortunately, was a horrible disappointment for me. I watched it right after reading the book. I don't know if that was maybe the idea to go, but the material, and Kate Blanchett played Bernadette. And if the character doesn't work, I'm not going to blame her. I think it's clear she knows how to play a role. So, can't recommend. And the movie was actually really tried to stay true to the book, but the book is kind of complicated because of that presenting it with letters and things. And so they really didn't know how to translate it to the screen. I'm not sure it wouldn't have been better off with something like a 4 or 6 part series. So yeah, that was my movies. That was my first book. My next book was The Home Edit by Clea Shearer and Joanna Teplin, which is a contrast to the KonMari method, although the basic principles are the same. The Home Edit, it's kind of a glossy high production thing on organizing, or book. It's a quick read with tons of examples, and respect to the authors for not stuffing it with words for the sake of words. It's really concise. So the organizing advice is pretty standard advice. Their take on it is fun. And I really liked that they had pictures and examples, which is probably going to speak to more of an audience than just a whole bunch of talking. So that is what it is. And my next book, Game Changer by Alex Beckett. It's set in a near world, kind of our world, that's dealt with climate change, with kind of a massive social change facilitated by technology. It's sort of cyberpunk, but it's not dark cyberpunk. It's, but it's not like a happy, happy, joy, joy Star Trek kind of a thing either. I really like the world that she created. It's a society that uses a sort of social credit score, similar to people giving each other likes. And the augmented reality thing is there. So it's very much being in the real world, but also being in the cyber world. But the thing that she created with this social credit score, it costs you to give somebody else credit. Like, you basically pay your credit to give someone else credit. So you have skin in the game. And she's done a whole bunch of other stuff. So I love this world. It's like something out of Black Mirror. Mm-hmm. And against that backdrop, her main character is a lawyer, but is also really good in this particular video game. So she's like a major celebrity because of this augmented reality video game. And then there's a mystery that comes up, and she's stuck in the middle of solving it, and it involves murder and investigation and a bunch of other stuff. So I really enjoyed the story. It's the first part of a series. I'm eagerly awaiting for the second one to come out. And if you like those kinds of stories, and also it's an extrapolation of our world, and she brings into it some generational stuff. Like, what would a generation that was raised on the wreckage of like my generation raping the world and not doing it, like, what would they think of things? Right. And she brings some of that into it. And I kind of really liked the way she was playing with that as well. The last book I talked about was, Murder of Mages. I think that's what it was called. Anyway, same author, same series, An Import of Intrigue and a Parliament of Bodies. This is part of the Meridane Constabulary by Marshall Ryan Maresca. And so these are the next two books in kind of a trilogy. He does really good world building, and the characters, I really enjoyed his characters in there. One is a woman who was a former kind of espionage agent who conned her way into becoming a police constable. And her partner is someone who's a little bit of an outcast. He is a unlicensed mage, and society doesn't like those. But also part of a police family and really good at solving crime. And they have this great partnership, and they solve crimes, and it's fun. And the last book is almost like the movie Saw. It's kind of this medieval, it's set in medieval times. They incorporate things from like a Saw like drama, which was really interesting in a medieval drama book. And that is that. The last book was Leviathan Wakes, which is The Expanse. I'm starting to read the book series. I'm just kind of starting to get hooked. And I'm only reading it because I enjoyed the TV series. It's hard to know how I feel about the book because I am so influenced by the TV series, but the characters really feel like the same characters that I'm seeing on the screen. So overall, I am enjoying this book. And that was my books. I can't believe I read that many books.
Can you believe this? I read books.
Yay!
Tell us about the books, Marina.
So, Colleen, you missed the drama last time that Dale and I talked. Dale influenced me to remove the bookmark from the book that had been stalling my reading.
Yes.
So I did, and then I started reading. So that's great.
Excellent.
So I am also cheating because I've started doing books on tape when I do my walks. So
that is a permissible cheat.
Yes. So I did read a book, though. I read What Would Jane Austen Do by Laurie Brown. Okay, admittedly, I think I picked this up at a – I'm pretty sure I picked this up at a book crossing meetup, and I love, like, Jane Austen-inspired stories, so I that's one of the reasons why I kind of picked this one up. The story kind of borrows from the Outlander idea where this woman gets taken back in time for reasons – and she basically has to solve a mystery in order to be returned home. And then, you know, drama happens while she's away. And when she comes back, she also has fallen in love in the past times. And now she's all like upset because she's back with, you know, the guy that she's fallen for. It's okay. It's an interesting enough concept. The writing is okay at best, I guess. She has Laurie Brown has a bunch of other books that are kind of like, I don't know if they're in this series or whatever, but I probably would not read anything else by her. I just didn't think the writing was, you know, really great.
Sometimes a slog is a slog.
Yeah. I still, you know, enjoyed reading it. It was nice to get back to like wanting to read, but I just didn't think it was particularly memorable. So, yeah. I read it, but I probably wouldn't recommend it. The one that I listened to, I'm also kind of torn because I'm not really sure how I feel about it. So it's called The Red by Tiffany Rice. It is a hardcore erotica, like okay. Hardcore. I'm not sure it was the best audiobook to start with. Because, I mean, you basically get two chapters, which are like, you know, just two chapters of a book. And then it gets into like every chapter is another entry into porn world. So it's very hardcore, but it was fine. The story left me feeling a little weird because it turns out to have like this supernatural angle, which she kind of clearly hints at, but wasn't really clear. And then when she gave us the reveal, I was like, what? So I'm not sure how I feel. I had added a couple of her other books to my to be read pile, but I may pass on them. I'm not sure I'm ready for it anymore.
Is this adjacent to monster erotica?
No, there aren't any monsters, but he's like the devil incarnate, I guess, sort of. I don't know. Like the basic conceit is this woman owns a gallery called The Red that she inherited from her mother. And she is gravely in debt. So the gallery, she's going to have to close the gallery. And her mother had told basically the promise that she had made her mom was that she would do anything to keep the gallery open. And then, you know, this mysterious guy shows up one day and he's like, I will give you I'll pay you with artwork to basically rent your body. Right. And I'll come and visit you. It's a contract that's a year long, and I'll come and visit you every month or every 3 months or whatever. And, you know, afterwards I will give you art. And so this continues for like 12 chapters or whatever it is, okay. With each chapter being another entry into like saliciousness. And it's fine. It's just, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. It was not what I expected. So yeah, that was The Red. I have mixed feelings.
All right.
And those are my books. Colleen, I know there's new Preston and Child, but I don't know if you've read it. I saw it at Costco and I almost bought it for you. I'm not even kidding.
I haven't even done a look at anything for a while.
There is new Preston and Child. It was a big hardcover. Oh, I looked at it and I said to Dan, I wonder if Colleen knows.
I can't afford hardcover book prices.
Who? At Costco, they're still like really pretty inexpensive. They're like $18 or something, but yeah, who wants a hardcover?
$10 on the membership.
I say, as I have one sitting behind me that I still haven't read, which I will get to next.
All right. Well, as everyone expects, there were more Clive Cussler books. And yes, Clive Cussler did write himself into them, but no one cares. Because one Clive Cussler book is pretty much interchangeable with all the other ones. So what you really want to know about is my new book, The Big Book, the 810-page encyclopedic volume of research information on Sarracenia of North America by Stuart McPherson.
Sarah what?
Yeah.
Sarracenia is a pitcher plant that exists only in North America, basically Mexico up to Canada. And it includes cobra lilies, even though they're a little bit of a side, sort of adjacent. They're closer to the proper Sarracenia than any other, so they lump them in with that too. But it is 5.7 pounds of book, 810 pages on one particular kind of plant. And I can't tell you how much I'm geeking out over owning it. And I bought it because it was 50% off on all of the Redfern books out of the natural history book source from the UK. And I sort of went, oh my God, I bought the one and I loved it. And there were still a couple days left in the month-long sale, 50%. So I clicked on all the ones I wanted and it would have been around 900 pounds worth. of money, probably close to that in actual volume heaviness of books too. And I chose not to. So I have to satisfy myself with just the one academic book until next year when the sale comes along again. And then I might buy the Sarracenia of South America, which is the Heliotropius pitcher plants or something. Maybe even the bromeliads. I don't know. It's all a mystery until I get that book. And that's it for that. I am maybe one of the few people in the world that cares. Now you all care too.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh, man. Anything else you guys want to talk about before we wrap things up? It's been, considering we haven't like watched or read a lot of stuff, like we talked for a while.
We did. I have a podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And it's related to my last book, Leviathan Wakes. It's called Ty and That Guy. It's with Ty Frank and Wes Chatham. Chatham plays Amos on The Expanse. And Ty Frank is one of the authors of the book and of the films. He wrote books with Daniel Abraham, and they came up with the pseudonym James S.A. Corey. So that's the writing team of those two. And they're going episode by episode through The Expanse TV show. They started out as an after show for season 5, but they always intended to go back to episode 1 and just start over. And they were both super influenced by Alien, which made me go back and rewatch Alien for the first time, I think, in like literally 25 years. And it holds up really well.
Alien's amazing. What?
Oh, sorry. The first Alien? No. I've seen Alien. I rewatched Alien. The first movie?
You hadn't rewatched it in 25 years?
Yeah, that's true. Bad on me. I know, right?
How is that possible? I'm in shock. I'm in literal shock.
Guess when it came out? I had forgotten when it came out.
79, I think.
Yes, you're dead on.
Yeah, because it's as old as I am. that's why I remember.
There you go.
It might have been one of the first movies we rented when we got a VCR.
Yeah, and I didn't see it in the theater. I watched it on I forget whether it was TV or VCR. Man, I was totally not into horror, so I took a pass on it. And some friends finally were like, "Dude, you're actually." I saw the second movie, and I really enjoyed Aliens, and that's when I must have rented it. Okay. Watched it on my 30-inch TV set.
Because the other day I was actually thinking, I saw something online. Somebody was talking about the assembly cut for Alien 3, which is on one of the special edition releases that I think it's on many of the special edition releases that they've released over the years. And I thought, oh, it's been a couple of years since I've seen that. I better revisit it because it has been a long time.
Yeah.
But I mean, we watch Alien and Aliens and, okay, surprisingly, Alien 4 a lot.
Oh my God.
Because it happens to be on TV all the time. So every once in a while, well, there you go. It's like, oh yeah, well, I'll watch this for a bit. Well, but yeah, no, we watch Alien and Aliens
so all the time. As you'll find if you listen to almost any of the podcasts, both Ty Frank and Wes Chatham were like hugely influenced by Alien, and they tell a lot of stories. Don't be put off in the first podcast. Like they're both guys and their experience early teens. They're talking about things like, you know, surfing late night TV, looking for shows that had boobies, which was what you did before the internet.
Well, if you
were a guy, I mean. Side boob would work. You always felt a little bit ripped off when you were channel surfing and came across a Magnum PI bikini shot because that felt like false advertising. It's like, oh, Magnum PI. Never mind. anyway, they talk about that experience a little bit, like when they were like watching Alien, because I think they caught it on late night TV. Anyway, lots of interesting talk about craft. Lots of interesting talk about their influence. They're just interesting guys anyway, and they really dig deep into things. And it was after hearing them, I was like, yeah, I have to rewatch Alien. And then was like, wow, yeah, I can really see where Alien influenced The Expanse. And there's a couple scenes in particular that were like, oh yeah, they did an homage to that in The Expanse. So it's kind of like a director's commentary, only a little bit different. And if you enjoy The Expanse and you enjoy behind the scenes stuff, I definitely recommend the podcast. And because they are involved with the show, the guests that they have are like straight from the show. So there's been a couple really great interviews with other people, who, like other actors and directors. The one from season 5 with the showrunner, whose name I forget, was absolutely utterly fascinating when he was talking about like doing it as a show. So yeah, that's my podcast, and that's me.
I'm not actually plugging anything because you can't watch it now, but I will say this. If anybody out there has the opportunity to watch or listen to the VFX team from SpinFX talk about the making of the show, I highly, highly, highly recommend it. They did a panel presentation for SparkFX, which is sadly now over, so you can't watch it. But if it becomes available again, I'll be sure to mention it. But if you have a chance to listen to the team talk about the making of the show, I highly recommend it because they've been on board since episode 1, season 1, and they've been basically part of the creative team behind it as well. So I'm actually kind of curious now to check back. I started watching some of the episodes from the season 5 behind the scenes after you mentioned it last time because it was so interesting. And I want to go back and finish that. So I'll definitely listen to the podcast too. But the making of with the VFX team is also super interesting because they talk a lot about the creative balance and the creative input that they had into the look and feel of the show as well. So if you have a chance to participate in anything like that, I'd highly recommend it. That's it. No more for me.
All right. I have one podcast from the TV show from the 70s, and then I think it got rebooted in the 2000s or something. Unsolved Mysteries now has a podcast, so carrying the same sort of mystery stuff that is on many other podcasts, but now you have the delightful Unsolved Mysteries sort of like musical sound opening, so that makes me nostalgic. Yeah, and that's it for me.
I don't have any new podcasts. I've just been listening to the same old stuff. But I will highlight an episode. There was a real, probably the best episode of, actually there's two. They're both Marc Maron. Clearly I'm a fan. But he had two really amazing interviews that I highly recommend, and both of which were rather surprising to me. So the one with, Tim Allen is fascinating because I didn't know that much about Tim Allen, the comedian. So I got to learn a little bit about his background, and hearing two comedians talk is really interesting. But that one is great. And then the other one is, oh my God, I've forgotten the name. Oh my God. Silence of the Lambs, ladies. Somebody help me.
I don't know.
The actress, Jodie Foster?
Yes, Jodie Foster. Thank you. My mind went blank. So the interview he did with Jodie Foster is super fascinating because they basically go over the course of her career and hearing her talk about realizing that there was like a craft to acting. And, she talks a little bit about going to school and the pushback that she got on that and then her switch into directing. It's just a really fascinating. I've never heard her be that kind of candid talking about her career. So it was a really, really fascinating and interesting listen. So I highly recommend that. So Marc Maron, killing it as usual.
I like Marc Maron too. His is too long for me to do regular, but yeah, he does. He did one with Bob Newhart that I immediately thought of when you said comedian talking to comedian, that was fascinating as well.
That might be good. Bob Newhart, the king of the pause. That guy had timing down so well.
Yeah. Well, and it's hilarious listening to them compare notes doing stand up in like, they're like, yeah, bachelorette parties are the worst.
Yeah. There was a lot of that when he was talking to Tim Allen as well. But it was just really, really interesting. Both of those episodes were standout for me of the ones from the last couple of batches that, cause they usually like pile up and then eventually I get around to them when I'm walking or whatever. So
links in the show notes. Yeah. So I don't have to Google it.
Yes. Consider it done. Consider it done.
Hooray.
And that's it for me.
It for me.
I think that wraps it up.
Sweet. It was good to talk to you guys and to catch up. I hope that everybody had fun listening in and we've got some good recommendations for you. I'm really curious now about everybody else's take on Superman and Lois. So let me know what you think. I'm curious.
It's going on my list.
It's on CW and CTV.
Okay. Yeah. Then I think it's CTV as well.
Yeah. Okay. It's on cable. It's on like regular TV.
Watching stuff on like Disney Plus and HBO and Amazon. Like,
we did look. We actually did look at getting Paramount Plus, but there isn't enough like new content
there for us.
Yeah, there's a new service. So Paramount has launched Paramount Plus in Canada and the US and I think in other territories, but with all of their movies and TV shows.
It costs me more than cable to subscribe to everything.
Somebody else, I had actually seen somebody else mention that they cut cable to save money and they're actually paying just as much, if not more, by subscribing to all of these things in order to be able to watch everything.
Yeah. I refuse. I have Netflix and I'm sticking to that because otherwise I will just have to work an extra day every week to pay for my television.
There's a lot. There is. Yeah. We subscribe to, enough of them. I mean, we've got Netflix and Amazon comes bundled with our Amazon Prime membership. So it's why we have Amazon. And we've got nieces, we live with a kid. And I live with a large child. Yeah. So Dan was like all in on Disney Plus. I'm like, if you want Disney Plus, you got to pay for it. So he did.
I am waiting for them to complete the entire Mandalorian season. Then I will get my 1 month free subscription and binge the entire thing. Until then, I'm out.
But there's a lot. The other one that I really, really like that I highly recommend, and it's pretty inexpensive, is Shudder. So I think it's $60 Canadian a year. So it turns out to be like less than $5 a month. And it's totally worth it if you like horror stuff,
right?
Yeah. Horror movies and TV shows. And I highly recommend it. It's awesome.
Right.
Awesome. Their back catalog is really impressive. Excellent. Really impressive. But okay, that's enough of that. Okay, so we'll be back in a couple of weeks. It will not be a month, I promise. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with another catch-up session. Until then, check out atcpod.ca for links to all the show notes, to links in the show note to all the things we talked about today, because that made no sense. Sorry. It's apparently getting late, and I'm like, I'm done.
The sad thing is it made sense to me.
Right? But like I said it and I'm like, wait, did that language come out right? But okay, again, I'm rambling. So come on by itcpod.ca. Links to all the things we talked about in the show notes. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. Until then.
We'll see you after the credits.